and she would make the link between the two. The expression on her face, the joy of understanding, of having a point of communication between herself and the man who would become her protector, those moments had been sublime. And they had been so few before she had been cruelly taken from him, as he had been cruelly taken from Emily, as his life had been cruelly taken from him. There was only cruelty, nothing more. The rest was a pretense to lull him into a sense of security that was no longer justified. He stopped and looked up, as a distant rumble was followed by a sudden flurry of snow and ice on the wind.
An unholy maelstrom, I dare say.
Within seconds, the air around them became an impenetrable mass of ice and snow, whipped to a ferocious speed by sudden squalls of wind. The numbing ice on their skin became the pinprick whiplash of solid particles hurled against the face and hands. Where they had been able to see in front, now they were all alone, each of them lost in the sudden blanket of white that the storm threw up around them.
Fire blast.
Ryan screwed up his good eye against the constant flurry of razor-sharp icicles, the empty socket of his rendered eye now gnawing with a dull ache as the cold penetrated through to the bone. If they didn't find cover soon, then they would be lost forever. If they didn't find one another, then all hope should be abandoned now. Taking a moment, dragging a breath as deep as he could, Ryan calmed himself. Panic was the real killer in such situations. If he could keep calm, move with economy, then there was a chance. He hadn't changed direction since the storm suddenly hit, so he knew roughly where the others had to be in relation to him. He could only hope that they too had been able to stay calm and not make any sudden panicked movements. Normally he would stake his life on it, but since they had landed in the redoubt, there had been a mood that made nothing as certain as it had been before. He knew how much he had been affected and had seen the others change similarly. There was only one way to know for sure. In the pockets and concealed storage flaps on his coat, he had a length of nylon rope, tough, fibrous, and waxed to ensure that it would run smoothly through the hands. It had lain unused since before Skydark. What had made him pick it up, he couldn't say, but he was glad now that he had. He couldn't tell how long it was in total, so unwilling to waste too much of the length, he opted to tie it around one sinewed wrist rather than his waist. Looping and tightening the knot, he paid out a short length and took slow, deliberate strides toward the last position he had seen Christy. He remained silent. There was no point shouting. To risk expelling air and inhaling the snows was uncalled for. Better to try to use energy wisely. Underfoot was becoming treacherous. They had been on a rock surface that grew slippery with the settling of the snow and ice. Ryan took each step carefully, trying to control the urge to move quickly, lest he completely lose his way. The slow motion feel was enhanced by the blanket of snow formed by the storm, making it seem as though he was standing still, even though he knew his feet were actually moving. Then suddenly, a shape loomed out of the white, a dark patch in the blizzard, resolving itself into a head of wild red curls, surmounting a heavy, snow-sodden fur. Christy was looking around wary, as though she were too cautious to move. Without word, she moved toward Ryan. Although visibility was impaired by the whirling snow and ice, she could see the rope, and she knew what she had to do. Tying herself on, she beckoned Ryan to the position where she had last seen Jack. The albino was also noticeable by his fur, forming another dark shade that loomed out of the whiteness. He was waiting patiently, as though expecting them. Forming a train, attached by the umbilical of the waxed rope, the three of them moved through the storm, trying to keep bearings on where their companions had been stationed when the storm descended. All could feel the cold begin to seep into their bones, aching that gave way to a comforting numbness, making them feel drowsy. Just lying down where they stood and falling into a deep sleep would feel so good. A sleep so deep that they would never reawaken. Time was of the essence. They had to find the others and then find some kind of shelter before the cold claimed them. One of the two was hard enough, given that they had to act swiftly and yet were hampered by conditions. To do both was almost asking the impossible. Yet they had no option. To think of either success or failure was to invite despair and to waste time. They could only act, not think. Dogged movements through the opaque blanket of white took them to JB. The armorer met them halfway, his own plan being to try to move toward them. His keen sense of direction had stood him in good stead among the whiteout chaos. Mildred was with him, having been close enough to catch up to him before the snows had become too obscuring, which left Doc.
Oh, the whiteness. Comforting. Like the blankets that covered me when I was young. Perhaps I should lay down now and sleep as I once slept beneath a counterpane this hue. I feel cold and yet warm. The outside will try to suck the heat from within me. Who am I to resist? There is nothing now but the white, the blank sheet of my mind, wiped clear of all extraneous matter. This is the state to which I should aspire, the state from which all madness shall recede. I shall be whole again, to sleep, perchance to dream. But what if I no longer wish to dream? What if I just wish to sleep and never wake? Or to sleep, and then, when finally I am arrested from the arms of Morpheus, to find myself back in the realms of sanity and the warm embrace of my beloved and our children. Now there is little to do but sink into the embrace of the light. It keeps away the phantoms that have so tortured me, making it a matter of simply resting my weary bones before blessed oblivion.
Mildred indicated where last she had seen Doc. Unwilling to say anything in the teeth of the gale, to waste breath and energy, she pointed to where the shambling figure of Doc had last been located. Roped together, as quickly as they dared in the uncertain and treacherous conditions, the five of them moved in a close line through the blinding hail of ice and snow. Stumbling on the rock and ice beneath, one almost dragging the others down with every other step, they continued toward the area where Doc had last been seen.
Shit!
Mildred's feet hit a soft, yet unyielding object. There was nothing in front of her except the white of the storm, and the sudden obstruction caused her to pitch forward, dragging JB behind her. Although she went down, the armorer struggled to keep his footing. The last thing they needed in such conditions was to tangle themselves by all hitting the ground. Feeling him pull on them, the others braced and held their footing until equilibrium was restored. Mildred, meanwhile, had recovered herself enough to be in a kneeling position and to know that the obstruction that had caused her to fall was the prone body of Doc Tanner. He lay on his side, curled up in a fetal ball, eyes wide and unseeing. For a moment she feared that he might be dead, but as she put her palm in front of his face, she could feel the heat of his breath. It was as though he had given up and lay down to die. By this time, the others had gathered. Mildred looked up, and from her expression, they knew he was still alive, despite their first impression. Now they were together, the first part of their task had been achieved. But with each passing second, the blazing storm sucked the heat from them, despite the thickness of their garb. The snow and ice stung the skin, the constant wet and cold causing the skin to chafe and split on their faces, their eyes streaming as the water was driven relentlessly into the fragile membrane. Stiffness crept into every limb, making movement harder with every moment. They had to move, to find shelter, but where? Wordlessly, Ryan moved so that he could help Mildred lift Doc to his feet. The old man was unhelpful, but not obstructive. It was as though he had no notion of what they were doing, his body a dead weight, a neutral presence. Jack indicated that they should move to the left, and took the lead. Ryan had no idea where the albino was headed, but trusted the hunter's sharp instincts to have spotted some possible shelter before the storm had made the landscape a featureless blank. Jack always kept himself open to the environment, no matter how it may be constituted, which was how he had managed to hone his hunting instincts in earlier days. It was how he was able to survive now. Even though thoughts other than the immediate surroundings had been racing through his mind while they had marched, still a part of his attention had been focused on the area through which they traveled, searching out any places where fresh game may be found, and where dangers may lie. As a result, he had spotted an area almost hidden behind a snowbank, where the rock had risen from the earth and formed a shelf. The snow had banked and gathered beneath it, but at one end it tailed away. There seemed to be no apparent reason for this, and Jack had figured that some passing fauna had burrowed it out, or else it had failed to take because of a vein of heat. The nearest volcanic mass was about half hour's march from where they now stood. That didn't mean that a shift in the earth and a fissure in the rock hadn't formed a tunnel through which some of the heat from the mass could escape. Unerringly, not thinking but trusting to instincts that had rarely set him wrong, Jack led them toward the area where he had seen the break in the snowbank. It was impossible to tell how near or far they may be until they were upon it. The ice beneath their feet grew less slippery, but the snows deeper, sucking at them with every step, trying to pull them down, making forward progress harder with every movement. Breath came in short gasps, lactic acid building in muscle and making their limbs feel heavy and useless, stumbling and almost falling, dragging one another down. Ryan and Mildred suffered most, with Doc propped between them, his arms over their shoulders, their own supporting his weight. He moved his legs mechanically, almost as if unaware of what he was doing, his weight shifting unpredictably as his feet lost purchase and he slipped first one way, then another. It was difficult for Ryan and Mildred to keep him and themselves from falling face first into the snowbank. Strength of will, stubbornness, a need to survive, those were the only things that could account for dragging one leaden foot after another, thigh muscles knotting in white-hot agony, so hot that they felt as though they could melt the surrounding snow and ice. And then they were out of the storm. Without even realizing, they passed from light to dark, white to black, from numbing cold to something a little warmer that was at first ineffective, but gradually began to thaw the cold in their bones, the numbness turning to the pain of frozen skin and muscle, before easing into something approaching normal. Pins and needles running through their extremities, a maddening itch inside their skin that couldn't be scratched. The floor was solid rock, uneven, and with a layer of moss that gave it an almost soft, carpeted feel. Inside their heavy clothing, even with the moisture the materials had absorbed, they felt circulation begin to return. They were thankful that Jack's ability to study and analyze his surroundings without even thinking about it had led him here. A thankfulness that they couldn't share with one another as they gasped in the warm air, able now to breathe more easily without freezing their throats and lungs, yet still unable to speak. After the bright white of the outside world, the cavern in which they found themselves was at first pitch black. A little light filtered in from the narrow opening to the outside world, marked by some moisture where the storm intruded, the cold air battling in swirls, with the warm air expelled from the cave. Gradually, as their eyes adjusted to the darkness, the dim light enabled them to discern dimly outlined shapes. Even Jack, whose red, pigmentless eyes preferred the gloom to the brilliance of strong light, found the conditions hard to read. They found themselves in a cavern that had a roof a little over 10 feet in height. Recovered sufficiently to do more than hunker on his hands and knees, gasping for breath and allowing his muscles to relax, for the seizing up of his body to gradually yield, Ryan withdrew a flashlight from one of his pockets and switched it on. The battery was still working, although not at full power. It barely illuminated the roof at the highest point, but showed the companions that they were in the center of the largest section of the cavern. It was narrow at the mouth through which they had passed, barely 5 feet in height, and rose to the 10-foot limit at which they found themselves now, before sloping to less than the circumference at the opening. Down to about 4 feet, it seemed to tail off into an endless tunnel, the beam of the flashlight not reaching far enough into the gloom to make the far wall visible. If indeed there was a far wall, and they were not at one end of an indefinite tunnel, the constant flow of warm air made this likely.
Thank heavens for that. I don't think any of us would have lasted much longer out there.
Christy dragged herself over to where Doc lay unmoving and seemingly oblivious to his surroundings.
How's he doing? Your guess is as good as mine. It's more than just the blizzard that's got to him. The physical symptoms I can treat, but the rest of it...
We'll worry about that later.
Ryan's flashlight was flickering, the beam failing. He hit the base, hoping that it was a connection rather than the battery that was causing the problem. JV delved into his own supplies and produced another. He handed it to Ryan.
Always have a contingency plan. Millie's got one as well, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Mildred rummaged through her own storage capacity to check that it was still on her person.
Check. At least that should keep us going for a while.
Storm passed soon. Too fierce to last. Maybe blow out.
Figure it might. If and when, we need to have some definite plan. We've been wandering like a bunch of stoops. Nearly bought us the farm. Can't let that happen again. Damn, it's hot in here. Hard to breathe.
Yeah. Anyway, as soon as the storm passes, I'll work out exactly where we've ended up and head us toward Anchorage.
Sure thing, JB. Right, Christy?
Right.
What Anchorage got?
Didn't get there last time we were here. But it's supposed to be the only vill in these Gaia-forsaken parts. Gotta be better than what we've seen so far.
Phew. Dead not hard.
Conversation fizzled out. They were too tired for anything other than basics. Mildred and Christy tended to Doc. After a short while, he seemed to become a little more aware of his surroundings. Although still silent and staring unseeing around him, he responded to touch and allowed them to seat him upright to tend to the abrasions and cuts he had suffered during the flight from the storm. Ryan, JB, and Jack marked out territory, examining the mouth of the cave and venturing a few hundred yards down the dark abyss of the tunnel. It seemed to stay at a constant height after a certain point and showed no signs of harboring dangers.
Where'd it go?
I figure it goes back to that big volcano we saw about 2 miles from here. When it got thrown up, I guessed that this was formed by some kind of pressure blowout, like a safety valve of some kind. That'd explain the hot air.
Then let's just hope that the bastard doesn't want to blow itself before the storm blows out. Otherwise, we get boiled or frozen.
Having marked out their parameters, the three men returned to where Doc was being tended by Christy and Mildred.
How's he doing?
Better physically. But as for the rest, hell, wherever he is, it sure isn't here.
They set camp where Doc was resting. With nothing in the cave to make a fire, they used some of the few self-heats they had left, some from the last remains of the food stores in the redoubt, and some that they had been carrying with them. The food was foul-tasting, but had the necessary nutrition. They were all too exhausted to care about anything except getting some nourishment and getting some sleep. Mildred fed Doc in silence. The old man took some of the food, but most of it dribbled down his slack chin, his eyes moving from side to side without seeing.
Only I. How can I be taking sustenance when there is nothing but myself? And I know that I am not the one feeding me. There is only one answer. Whoever is feeding me does not exist, and I am not really eating. The food and the feeder are nothing more than mere illusions sent to torture me, to take me back to the hell from whence I have only recently managed to flee. But I shall not return. If that was sanity, then I wish nothing more than insanity. If it was insanity, then whatever truth sanity holds for me cannot surpass the horror. There is only I. I. But who am I?
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.